Today, who will stop the elites printing $100 trillion? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined by economist John Adams. Hello, John.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
Very good. Good to see you once again.
You too.
Now, we're going to have a big conversation tonight about big numbers, aren't we?
Yes. And there is someone who's proposed some big numbers. So and that's core to their thesis. So we'll have to talk about that individual, their thesis, and how this $100 trillion number comes into play.
Sure. So the person we're talking about, just to sort of get the name on the table, is Harry Dent, right? So
yes.
We had the chance to spend some time with Harry last week. And in fact, I put up an earlier post regarding central banks. And
yes.
I'll put the link up to that. But there was also another conversation that you and he had that I recorded.
That is exactly correct.
And so we're going to spend a little bit of time around that conversation.
Yes.
But in a rather different way. We're just not going to play it straight, right?
No.
Because there are some really interesting thematics coming through that perhaps are just one way of seeing the problem.
Yes.
Or maybe not seeing the same problems that we see.
Yes, yes. So I think the key thing for the viewers to know is, and obviously there's quite a few of our viewers who have followed Harry Dent over the last few years. And to be honest, I have followed Harry Dent. I have bought his books. I have read his thesis. I mean, he's not the only person I follow, but there's a whole host of other people. I sort of look at their work as well. Now, the reason why I thought it'd be that we shouldn't necessarily play the whole the whole interview without this discussion first is that the Dent thesis, it is a very specific thesis. It is a very specific scenario. And obviously your work at DFA's work is a series of scenarios. My six pathways to economic Armageddon that are published with news.com was six scenarios. So we're basically saying that depending on a range of factors, certain things may happen. And we haven't said one way or the other which one of those things will it be. But the Dent thesis is very categorical. It is one event, global depression, and because there is going to be a global depression according to the Dent thesis, the way you prepare yourself economically, it's very specific. And obviously Harry has been in the country several times in the last decade talking about the thesis. And to be honest, because, for example, he was here several years ago saying that property prices was going to fall 50% within 12 months, and that didn't materially happen. People have criticised the thesis that he has expressed. Mm-hmm. Now, just so we're clear, a global depression is actually one of my six scenarios. So the Dent thesis is absolutely plausible. But what I did in this interview with Harry was to unpack the core tenets of the Dent thesis and get down to some very specific technical questions about how this may play out to really ascertain whether a depression is the only scenario that may play or could there be a few other scenarios that may result depending on a whole host of factors.
I think let's just pause. Scenarios are really useful, right? Because what it shows is that there is a degree of uncertainty about how all of these things may play out. And there are lots of different moving parts. And the problem with being really definitive about a particular set of outcomes, and I guess you could say Steve Keen had this issue a decade ago, right?
Yes.
If it starts to go off track, then everybody says, see, you don't know what you're talking about, right?
Precisely.
The point about economics is there are so many moving parts and it's a very complicated set of mechanisms, and you're also trying to predict a whole bunch of externalities like who different players and stakeholders might do react, how they would react, what they'll do and all those sorts of things, right?
Yes.
So all of those things mean that scenarios is a much better way of articulating some of the different interplays and opportunities and possibilities.
Precisely. And one of the, I think just talking about economics for a second, you know, when we talk about the sciences, I would prefer to think of economics as a social science as opposed to physics.
Right.
So physics, it's very in terms of axioms, in terms of physical laws, in terms of equations, it is very sort of logical, sort of straight. You do this will happen. Whereas, you know, because we're dealing with people, and people behave in certain different ways under certain circumstances, and because we have institutions like government, and they have the capacity to make decisions that affect how people will react in an economy. That's why thinking of it as a social science is more appropriate. Therefore, if it's a social science, there is an element of subjectivity when it comes to economics. And obviously, that's how some of the, when I think about where this economy is going to go, where this Armageddon, how it's going to play out, I do think of those subjective elements and how those subjective elements may play out from the politics to consumer behavior to financial markets, etc.
Yeah, and actually I use fractal modeling in my scenarios, right? Trying to make the point that there are so many interconnections and so many potential outcomes that you can't always be definitive about that outcome or that outcome, right?
Yes.
And so again, it's trying to build in that degree of uncertainty and unpredictability into the modeling.
Yes.
And that's actually really important. And by the way, central banks and treasury, you should be doing more of this stuff, not just sticking to your narrow specific view, right? Despite all the evidence.
Yes.
As we've said before.
Exactly. Yeah, look, I think the Reserve Bank and Treasury to a large degree are still stuck in the 1930s with Keynes's general theory.
Yeah.
But I think it's important because in fact I actually got a phone call 2 days ago from an individual who sold their property in 2016. And this individual told me it was based on the dent thesis, thinking that an impending property crash was going to happen. They've been renting for about 2 years now. They're in regional Victoria, so we are seeing that in the capital cities like Melbourne, prices are coming down. So they are looking now to at some point, because they need to live in something, so they need to buy a property at some point. So maybe they can purchase a property with a good deal because there's a falling market, but it is a clear example of where when an economist is categorical and that prediction doesn't come out true. For those who are maybe not accustomed to economics or not sophisticated about some of the technical issues, it could lead to financial decisions that may not play out in the best interest of certain individuals. So obviously that's why I wanted to sort of really get to the essence of the dent thesis and obviously see whether it stacks up or it doesn't stack up. And truth be told, even though a depression is plausible, and we'll explain how it is plausible, by the end of the conversation with Dent, I walked away not like more unconvinced by the Dent thesis than when I started.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So speaking to Dent convinced me that perhaps he's more wrong than right. And that sort of transformation happened during the conversation.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. Well, let's start, shall we, by going through the Dent conversations or pieces of it,
yes,
and then effectively providing some narrative around each one, and then take us towards that journey that you've described.
One of the central points of the Dent thesis is that there are two factors, two core factors that are going to lead to a deflationary depression globally. One is poor demographics, particularly in advanced economies, with Australia excluded, because according to Harry's analysis, we have reasonable demographics because of our immigration program. So the demographic profile of most European and Northern American economies is quite bad, and that's going to have a deflationary effect on their economies. But then obviously it is the debt bomb that you and I have talked about, that obviously Harry is in whole agreement on, and obviously Harry has been around the country for the last week, and you've got some feedback that apparently Harry has said that only you and I really know what's happening in the Australian economy. So he's been expressing that to his audience, which is obviously a tribute to us.
Yes, I think it was quite nice for him to actually say that. Didn't have to, but he actually did. He quoted some of our material and did say that we actually had our finger on the pulse.
Yes. So why don't we play this first clip of Harry talking about these two central tenets? Tour, and you gave some media interviews, and you talked about your thesis around how the world, but as well as Australia, will go through some sort of depression. Something more significant than 10 years ago could rival the Great Depression. And you gave some particular particular forecasts about property in particular. So this conversation, I want to unpack that thesis and sort of explore a few elements. So to the average viewer watching the show, so when you talk about a global depression and a depression in Australia, to the average viewer, to the average Aussie, what does that look like?
Well, there's two things going on globally. The developed countries, everybody except Australia and a few other small countries, have a demographic problem. There's aging. People aren't having as many children, and more and more people are moving into their 50s and 60s and 70s, where they don't make as much money, they don't spend as much money, and they start drawing on the systems, the government systems,
All
the entitlements and stuff. So this is something entirely predictable. I said in 1989, in my first book, that in 2007 we'd see a peak in most stock markets in the world, and then we'd start to see a downturn globally led by developed countries. Now, not emerging countries, not China, not India, and all that. So that's number one. Number two, we've had an unprecedented debt bubble around the world.
Yep.
Into 2007, all the developed countries borrowed. Governments borrowed, consumers borrowed to buy real estate, corporations, financial institutions put out derivatives and borrowed money to leverage the system. This only happens about once in a lifetime. The last major debt bubble we had in the world peaked in 1929. And we know what followed that.
Yeah.
We had financial bubbles going into it, and we had a deleveraging of debt and financial bubbles in the greatest depression in history.
Right. And what's fascinating about that is that he is dead right. We all agree on the debt bomb, right? So
yes,
we can tick that. And the demographic thing, I think, is also significant. Think of Japan.
Yes. Yeah. Indeed. So now we have a description of from Harry as to what are the two sort of factors that are going to lead to this global depression, and then I asked Harry about triggers. How is this going to? Where's this going to emanate from? And he nominated two specific triggers that will cause a depression. So how about we play that clip?
So the basic thesis is the emerging market economies, they're going to get in trouble. And
I think globally that's the trigger. Australia is acting just like the U.S. did last time. Real estate is peaking first and coming down first. Banks are tightening credit. And so real estate is a much, much, much bigger deal for Australia and the United States, because 28% of our net worth is in real estate in the United States. Most of it's in financial assets like stocks and stuff. 67% of net worth in Australia. And Australia, by the way, has the highest median net worth in the world. It's slightly ahead of the United States, even though we have higher incomes. You guys have higher net worth because of what?
Property.
Real estate.
And it's all above.
So you guys are way more exposed. Real estate starts to go down. The banks here are way exposed to it. People are exposed to it. And so that is going to cause, that's going to be an internal crisis that starts to trigger here. It's not going to be your stock market crashing that's going to trigger a crisis here.
Right. Yeah. So obviously we have heard Harry just express that the global depression is going to result, when we think about the emerging markets. So obviously there has been massive disruption in the emerging markets over the last 6 months, whether it's Argentina or Turkey or Pakistan, South Africa, India, Indonesia, etc., or even the Philippines with their inflation problem. So the debt issue, the debt bomb, is manifesting itself in those economies now. Harry's view is that will lead to some sort of systemic default. And that will start to spread with contagion, and that will be the cascading effect. So that was number one. Number two, so that was the first factor. The second factor was that in the context of Australia, and our house prices and debt are so significant that Harry believes we're going to go through some sort of experience what the United States went through in 2006. So 2006, 2007. So the GFC started in 2008, but before the 2 years before that was subprime. And subprime was basically a whole host of people who couldn't afford their mortgages. Now, obviously, with the way our banks have issued the loans, we haven't got an acute subprime issue ourselves. But particularly with this issue of conversion of interest only to principal and interest, that could behave in a very similar manner. So Harry believes that the Australian economy, independent of the rest of the world, is looking like the United States in 2006. Now, so there's a couple of points there. So the Reserve Bank, I think one of the deputy governors last week said publicly that even though we have high household debt, the debt in and of itself will not lead to a systemic crisis domestically. And to be honest, I am sympathetic to that argument from the Reserve Bank. The way I see our domestic debt problem is that it will become a very big issue if we have an external economic shock coming from overseas. But obviously, because you look at the finance statistics with your survey data more closely, I mean, how do you see this issue of will our debt domestically cause an issue, or will it require a global shock to generate a depression in Australia?
Well, it goes back to those scenarios, right? So I can look at it both ways. If we don't get external bad news and frankly get hit over the head by a 4x2 from, you know, emerging markets or from the Fed doing dumb things, then there is a chance that we can actually see a relatively contained fall in home prices and a contained fall in debt, which is manageable, as long as inflation doesn't go too far the wrong way, employment or unemployment particularly starts to rise, and interest rates don't move up. Any of those things will be a sufficiently large trigger to move us further into problem areas, right?
Sure. So problem areas, but independent of the economic shock, you don't believe that we will have a depression in Australia?
No. Right. Exactly. So it's sort of on the gradation, but all bets are off if you get that external force, as we had in 2007 and 2008.
Yes, and obviously we want to be fair to Harry. So Harry's thesis is specifically we will have a global depression because global debt it is unsustainable. Yep. So it's not that he's saying we will have a domestic depression independent of the rest of the world. Yep. His thesis is that we have some domestic issues that will play a big role, but there will be an external cascading issue with debt.
And the way I think about it is, if the emerging market is the trigger this time, of course, last time it wasn't emerging markets, it was actually the developed world.
Yes.
Between the US and Europe.
Yes.
Emerging markets, but it will be amplified in Australia because of the high debt profile that we have and the risk in our housing sector.
Absolutely. Yep. Oh, but also because of the foreign debt and the exposure of our banks to the international credit
Absolutely.
Markets.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously we've just talked about Harry's thesis about triggers.
Yep.
Now, the core prerequisite, in my view, to having a depression is the financial. The banks have to fail around the world, yep. Including some of our banks, so the financial markets has to blow up. Now, when I've looked at previous depressions historically in the 20th century, in the 21st century, of a global nature, it always resulted in the banks failing. Now, this is obviously a central conversation that you and I have been having, but also this is the mandate of APRA Financial Stability. This is the Financial Stability Board coming out of the G20. So, for a global depression to happen, the banks must collapse. If they do not, because of bail-in, because of bailout, because of quantitative easing, because of negative interest rates or zero interest rates, a depression is likely not to occur. So the debt thesis. One of the things it does hinge on, the banks must collapse.
So because of that, so is your thesis that we will see banks around the world fall over?
Yes. Ben Bernanke said he knew about the subprime loans. He says, look, it's only this percent of loans. It's only blah, blah, blah. It's containable. No, it wasn't containable because it started a domino effect.
Sure. Okay. So basically, to summarize your position, so you do expect systemic bank failures across the country.
And we know that our policymakers and policymakers around the world are focused to move heaven and earth to ensure that that event does not happen. So one of the core assumptions of the debt thesis is that attempt to save the banks and the financial markets will ultimately fail. Now we'll talk about where this $100 trillion figure comes in terms of printing to save the banks or to reflate the debt bubble. But do you have any comments about this central assumption that the banks will fail and that the banks must fail in order to have a global depression?
Well, certainly the modelling that I've done suggests that you need to have that complete collapse of part of the financial system, right? And it's worth observing, it could be the derivative sector, because that is massive and could be a very big trigger, or it could simply be that effectively confidence and therefore liquidity within the banking system decays again like it did around the GFC.
Yes.
So there are a couple of different potential features, but I agree that there seems to need to be a banking failure, a considerable, significant set of bank failures to trigger the problem.
Indeed. Now, because it is uncertain as to whether the banks will fail or not, I mean, that's why in my scenarios, my six scenarios that I've published publicly, a depression is one of them, but it's not the only one, because I can't categorically say the banks will fail. Mm. They may not. But yet, I guess the Dent has said that categorically they will.
Yep.
So for those listening to this program who have gone to Harry's events, read his books like I have, and who have either sold property or if thinking about selling property based on the Dent thesis, you must have at the center of your financial decision making this question: will the banks fail or not? If you do that, if you do believe that they will fail, then listening to the prescription, the financial prescription of Dent, it is sound. Although on the flip side, if you have a lot of money in the banks, large deposits, and you believe the Dent thesis, well, if there is a systemic failure in the banking system, you will lose your deposit. I mean, that is a consequence of this central assumption.
Mm. Yep, no, I agree with that. And, you know, remember that the banks have much more capital than previously. So, you know, that's the one thing that you can say compared with 2008. The banks are better capitalized now, right?
Ah.
But that doesn't save the day, in my view.
Yeah, yes. So that's a really important point. There's more debt in the system.
Yep.
The banks are more capitalized, and some of that debt has been shifted out of the banking system into capital markets.
Yep.
So it could well be that the capital markets blow up, and that then is so enormous that it subsumes the banks, as opposed to the problems initiating in the banks themselves.
Yeah, and that's why I come back to derivatives, right? So if you think about the 570 trillion or whatever the number is now, you know, depends on what it is, that number on its own is so huge. And the problem is that if you look at the real value of bank failures last time around, the derivatives relating to it was 3 or 4 times larger. In other words, the failed contracts were three or four times larger than the underlying bank losses, right? And so that's why I think personally derivatives is where a lot of the potential risk will be. And a lot of that is then, as you say, outside standard banking.
Yes. Now, so the last time there was an issue in the banks, central banks printed $15 trillion, zero interest rates, governments had fiscal stimulus, everyone got involved. So obviously, if you've started to see systemic problems, if you start to see declarations of insolvency in the financial system, now, if you let the financial system go, you will have a depression. And obviously, when we spoke with Sean Quinn in the episode about Ireland, and we said, well, what if there was a cut of liquidity or a threat to cut liquidity to our banking system? And I said, basically let the system go, have a depression. So we said in that situation, if we had the choice, depression is actually the right course of action, because we want to liquidate the debt out of the Australian economy. But obviously the I will go on in the next clip is to ask the central question to Dent: will they intervene or will they let the system go? He did say that they will attempt to intervene. So let's listen to Harry say that.
Sure. So when we start to see systemic risk coming to the fore in the global economy, do you think that the governments and the politicians, they're going to let the system go, or they're going to attempt to intervene to rescue the situation?
Of course they're going to attempt.
So we just heard Harry say that there will be an attempt to print. So this is where actually Harry and I agree. So Harry says the banks will fail, but they will try to save it. Now, I'm not sure if the banks will fail, but I do agree with Harry that if there is a systemic global problem, they will attempt to step in, whether, again, bailout, bail-in, zero interest rates, quantitative easing, negative interest rates, fiscal stimulus, all of the existing policy tools. And who knows, maybe the central banks have a few new techniques that they have been developing over the last time. So the question then becomes is, if they will intervene, which Harry and I agree with, the question is, what does that intervention look like? Now we've just described a whole host of techniques, but after the last GFC, the world central banks printed about 15 trillion. Now we know that the bubble is bigger than 10 years ago. So mathematically, to my mind, the printing will have to be more than 15 trillion. What is the precise number? I don't know. And my feeling is that no one knows, and no one will ever know until the situation arises. But Harry does express a number about $100 trillion. So let's listen to Harry talk about that.
All of this stimulus, they've already done this. If the economy starts to fail, and I think fail badly, people will say, the government's going to say, oh, well, we just didn't do enough. Oh, okay, so $16 trillion didn't work. So you're going to need $50 trillion this time, quantitative easing? $100 trillion? My estimate, $100 trillion in the world, $100 trillion out of about $300 trillion in debt is at risk of defaulting. They're going to print $100 trillion to offset that. I don't think people are going to go for it.
And that is a really big number.
That is a very big number. No one can be categorical about the number because we really don't know until that situation rises and how bad fear is, how bad panic is, how bad the derivatives go, how bad the systemic defaults are. Now, it could be less than 100 trillion, it could be 100 trillion, it could actually be more than 100 trillion. So that is a big assumption about if they have to print, they may have to print up to 100 trillion. So let's accept that. Now, the core essence of the Dent thesis at this point is to say that there are political limitations to the elites, the central banks printing $100 trillion. Now, and obviously Harry goes on to explain why that is. So let's listen to Harry talk about these limitations.
So your thesis is what the politicians will the politicians attempt to print $100 trillion or they won't?
They will propose to, and they'll start be people going, well, wait a minute, you did this before and it didn't work. Now we're in a worse situation than before. Why would this work this time?
So this is probably where I have the most problems with the Dent thesis. Now. Because I had to sort of go after Dent on this on a few occasions because I really wanted to nail him on there because initially he was saying was the governments will propose to print and then there will be voices to say do not do it. My contention is when you are in the heat of the crisis, when it's like with the Royal Bank of Scotland, they're calling up the government and says we've got 5 hours until we go broke. If they have to print, if they've got to pump in liquidity, Bank of England, RBA, US Federal Reserve, those conversations are private between government, central bank, and the banks. Public does not know, and they will print, and there is no one to stop them in trying to inject that level of printing by the central banks. Now, if there is a requirement to do fiscal stimulus, that could face some political opposition, but what happened last time? We will have, they ran a massive scare campaign. It will be a depression. The ATMs won't work. Your credit cards won't work. The credit system is going to collapse. People will go hungry. We have to spend this, otherwise it is the end of the world. That's what they said last time. That's what they'll say again. Now, whether that will be sufficient to allow fiscal stimulus and the central banks to print, or will there be enough voices to say this is the wrong course of action? Because again, you can't think about this having a conversation like today where things are calm. It is when people are panicking and banks say we only have hours to exist. What are you going to do? And this is a conversation I've had with one particular federal parliamentarian when we were talking about this. I said, imagine if your PM, now he's not, it wasn't the PM, it was actually a backbencher, but I said, imagine if your PM and I'm your advisor and I'm coming to you and saying you've got hours to act as prime minister. Well, you know, I mean, that's how this is. That's the scenario in which these decisions are made. So I find it highly problematic that there will be political limitations. I mean, the only way if they have to print 100 trillion, the only way that's going to be stopped is through civil war or revolution. That's the only way you're going to stop these elites from doing that if that is required. But again, the core essence of the Dent thesis is that there'll be political opposition, and they won't do it.
Mm. And it's worth saying, isn't it, if you think about things like, you know, the bail-in and the bail-out and the other mechanisms they've put in place, and all of the recent commentary from the RBA and from Treasury, they're all positioning effectively to say, if we need to, we can do it.
Precisely, yep. Precisely. And in terms of our last episode about gold and what the Reserve Bank governor has said, yep. I mean, he has effectively said that he is ready to act.
Yep.
And he said that the government debt of the Commonwealth is low, and that if there is a shock, the balance sheet can absorb more debt. So you know, there is no voices at the moment outside of the establishment saying we will oppose to the point of a coup d'etat of stopping the government and the central bank from printing. So, but again, you know, that is a core element. Now, that's the political side. The economic side is, if you print 100 trillion, what does that do? Now, in the course of human history, no one globally has tried to attempt to print $100 trillion. If that attempt economically fails, we will have a depression. Harris' thesis comes true. If it actually works to put a floor under the global economy and to reinflate the debt bubble, but it'll be obviously bigger and riskier than we are today, well, we may not have a depression, but we may have a global currency crisis, which is one of my scenarios, etc. So again, if they can politically do it, we don't know what that will do because it's never been done for before. But I guess this is another point of contention that I have with Harry is he's been very categorical to say global depression, and yet no one knows if they print 100 trillion what will happen.
Sure. And of course, no doubt that will inflate asset prices even more. Like last time, it will lift the amount of debt in the system. It will probably create even more inequality. All of those things that we saw from a decade ago and are still working through.
Yes.
Only writ large.
Yes, yes. Now, the thing is that there are certain people who have said historically, you can just do this again and again and again, and you can do it for in perpetuity.
Mm.
Now, I'm not necessarily a believer in that. I think there are limitations to how often and how much you can do this. But is the next crisis, which could be in the next 2 years, at $100 trillion, is that the limit of the system? That's what we don't know.
Mm.
It's kind of like going to the edge of the abyss. Once you're there, you know, what's going to happen? What does the abyss look like? We don't know.
Well, you don't know whether it actually drops off a cliff or whether actually you can just keep going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what we're really saying is this would continue the QE type experiment of a decade ago.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Doing precisely the same sorts of things again. And remember that, you know, a decade later, we still haven't recovered from the first one.
Yes.
So there would be a bunch of consequences if, in fact, we went down that route.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, at some point for a future conversation, what is happening in the gold market with central banks hoarding amounts of gold and positioning away from the US dollar? Now, obviously, a lot of this $15 trillion that was printed 10 years ago was a lot of US dollar printing. If there was an attempt to, if there was $100 trillion printed, a big chunk of that, again, would be US dollars. There would be a question as to whether, other countries want to hold US dollars? Do they, or they want to hold something tangible like gold? And if there is a shift of portfolio allocation, that could actually lead to a dumping of the dollar, and that could have, you know, like all sorts of effects. I mean, Ray Dalio only in the last week has said that if the US dollar lost its reserve currency status, the US dollar would lose 30% of its value. Now, Peter Schiff, who's like sort of, you know, one of the arch rivals of Mr. Dent, he said now he thinks it could be up to 70% of value. So yeah, there are massive consequences to what the US dollar could do and what that would mean for the global monetary system if they pushed it really to the limit. But would that necessarily result in a depression? Not necessarily.
Yep. So where do we go from there, John?
So hopefully people who are thinking about what is the pathway forward for the Australian economy, but also for their own personal circumstances. I mean, you're getting correspondence, I'm getting correspondence, I get phone calls, emails from people to ask me how this will play out, where will this go. Certain people are listening to different voices and making financial decisions about that. Hopefully what we've tried to do in this conversation is there are certain people who are putting very definitive views, and to fully understand whether that definitive view is accurate or not, I think people need to get to the core essence of that, really question the assumptions, try to understand whether those assumptions will hold water in all conditions or not. And then once you get down to that, to the essence of the thesis, whether you've got to make the judgment, do you agree with it? Do you don't agree with it? And in the Dent thesis, after the conversation, I walked away saying, well, if they have to print $100 trillion, they will print $100 trillion. No one will stop them. And no one really can be categorical as to what will the economic effect of $100 trillion be. Because I think it's going to have more implications around inflation, but also implications for the international monetary system, as opposed to resulting in a depression. So that's why by the end of the conversation, I was less convinced about the Dent thesis compared to when I started the conversation.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And to my mind, I think I get a lot of questions as well. You know, what should I do? What should I do? Right? And I don't tell people, I'm not allowed to and wouldn't want to. But what I do say is you need to form your own view as to what you think the scenario is that you want to actually, if you like, pick from the range that are there. Right? Or select the few that actually point you in that particular direction, and then make a decision about whether it's fundamentally about trying to protect what you've got or whether you're trying to actually create more value if it plays out.
Yeah.
Because actually you do different things in those different scenarios, right? But the bottom line is nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
And that is the really important message, I think, out of this conversation, that we can talk about this and we can explore different scenarios and different options, but you've actually got to keep a watch of things as they develop, because there are so many moving parts and so many variables. So be a little bit cautious of somebody who says definitively, I know what the answer is.
Absolutely.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So there you have it. I'm afraid there are no simple answers. In a way, it would be nice if there were, but on the other hand, it means that you've also got an opportunity to think about different scenarios. And of course, as you work with us, you'll hear more about those different scenarios as they play out. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.